kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I'm your host, Joe. We have another reviews episode lined up for you, and we're kicking things off. Ian Griffin, how are you doing?
I am doing just fantastic.
How have you been?
Not too bad. I'm just loving the quote-unquote winter weather we've been having. Yeah. Just, you know, it's kind of rainy, drizzling one day, and then kind of, sort of snow the next.
Yeah. And
temperature can't really get shit straightened out. I mean,
yeah, on the upside, it'd be nice if Mother Nature just made up her goddamn mind already.
Yeah, I mean, well, on the upside, I think only once in the last like 2 months have I actually had to get out and plow snow, and it sucked because it was like that super heavy wet, because it warmed up just enough to turn, like, I mean, it's perfect snowman weather.
Yeah,
but trying to blow that shit out of the driveway, man, it's such a pain because you have to like stop every couple of minutes, clean all the shit up, because the snow would clog up and turn into like hard packed slush, like that kind of shit.
Jeez.
Like if you polished a snowball down hard enough, it would have the density that you could give somebody a concussion. Like that kind of hard pack.
That's always healthy.
Oh yeah.
I think we only had one real measurable snowfall here, and it was the heavy wet stuff. So we didn't even get to try out our new snowblower.
Yeah.
Just because It was so heavy. So we had to do it by hand.
Ugh. Yeah, I bet your back and shoulders were feeling fantastic after that.
Hey, you saw that we have a driveway now, so.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, nothing like a little exercise. Mm. Yeah. Pump that snow. Oh, yeah.
So how have things been in your world?
Not too bad. I mean, I've just been just sitting back, relaxing. You know, I mean, winter's kind of a downtime just because of how limiting the weather, especially this weather, is making things. You know, can't really go out and do yard work. And, but, you know, I've been keeping myself busy.
How's the streaming going?
Not too bad. I mean, granted, swing shift has its pros and cons, but, you know, it's been doing pretty good. Speaking of streaming, like once the embargo lifted and I was able to openly stream Jagged Alliance Rage, I'd actually been getting, comparatively speaking, pretty decent viewers.
Nice. You know,
a lot of people bouncing in and asking about it. You know, especially people that are fans of the series, because, well, to somewhat seamlessly segue into the review, this is the first Jagged Alliance game I've ever played. Although I have been familiar with the series, I just never really knew what it was all about, because I think Jagged Alliance 2 came out in 99. I think that's because I looked it up. Yeah, unless it was 99.
Doing homework.
Yeah. Well, I'll kind of explain why in a bit once I really get to the meat and potatoes of the review. And, you know, people come in and be like, hey, you know, like, how's the game? What do you think of it? And, you know, how's it compared to the older games? And of course, I, you know, throw out the disclaimer, it's like, this is the first time I played a Jag Alliance game, so I can't really compare it to predecessors in series, but based on, you know, cold turkey playthrough, this is how I feel about it. You know, by all means, you know, stick around and watch me play and try to half-ass my way through this and, you know, draw your own conclusions. But, you know, if you see any flaws or issues or problems, it might not necessarily be the game. It just might be me sucking.
I've been there.
Yeah. But it was actually really interesting to get their input, because they would, you know, make comparisons to the older games. And, you know, and I'm trying to think, because I think it's on sale for somewhere between 18 to 20 bucks. I'm not sure if it's like on sale or if that's the final price point.
Of Rage?
Yeah.
Well, should we just dive into this? I'll go over the spiel. All right. First game to talk about tonight is called Jagged Alliance Rage, developed by Cliffhanger Productions, published by Handy Games and THQ Nordic. Released December 6th on Xbox One and PS4 for $29.99, on Steam for $19.99. Jagged Alliance is back with a new take on turn-based tactics, adventure elements, and the well-known quirky mercenaries. Set 20 years after the first Jagged Alliance, the spin-off lets you experience a road trip into a jungle hell and test your mind and body to the limits. So there you go. It's $20 on Steam.
Okay. I kind of feel bad that the console players are kind of getting the price hike.
It happens. We just did a game on the last episode, Asterix and Obelix, and it's a $20 difference.
Ugh.
Yeah.
I mean, I may be a card carrying member of the PC Master Race, but come on. I mean, I don't need console players that much.
I can understand a $10 console tax because it happens, but so I'm not too surprised by a $10 difference. It happens.
Yeah. But to get into it, Jagged Alliance Rage is a turn-based tactics game. To compare it to a contemporary XCOM. Hmm. Yeah, I mean, for anyone that may not be familiar with the series, especially since, you know, Jagged Alliance 2 came out like 99, like what, 20 years ago?
I'm like,
God, you know your old one. So for anyone that's not familiar with the franchise, I mean, it's sort of like XCOM, and I'm gonna do my best to not compare it to XCOM because XCOM is its own established monster. But basically the general premise is that you have a pool of six agents to choose from, and each agent has their pros and cons, and they all have their little niche skills. Like, you know, one of them's a sniper, one of them has like the leadership skills, another one is the stealthy black ops guy, another one has I think she's like a machinist. Basically, her perks revolve around upkeeping your weapons and armor for a lot less than you would normally have to pay for it when you're doing your shit. Mm. There's like a glass cannon sniper. There's like the huge giant meat shield heavy weapons guy. So you basically pick two, and then the story is that you're going to this nondescript Latin American island somewhere in the general vicinity of Central South America-ish to rescue them, but it turns out that you get captured, so you break out, you meet up with the rebel resistance, and you eventually find the guy you're supposed to rescue, and he actually ends up joining your party. So the nifty, like, so at first a downside might seem that, like, you're stuck with the two people you pick.
Yeah.
And you can't really swap them around. But like I said, eventually you'll run into the guy you're supposed to rescue, and you can choose whether or not you want him to join your group. And eventually you'll get to a point where you'll try to quote-unquote radio for extraction, but due to tight resources and issues and paperwork, you can only afford to call in a buddy. So basically you go back to the pool of characters and you can select one more person to join, so you can have up to four people. And you know, and you basically run around the island and do this and that. And the cool thing is that, like, unlike this is one comparison I will draw to XCOM, because in XCOM you kind of have like your giant hub where you have to build your base and you do missions from there. Here you roam around the island, and in between the actual battles, there's these little resting spots where you can kind of go into like a little camp mode, and based upon who you have and what you have in your collective inventory, you can just rest and recover hit points from a fight. Or, like I said, if you have the machinist, you can have her just repair all of your gear. Or if you have the berserker guy, you can have him craft like explosives or IEDs or mines and stuff you can use for future battles. Or, you know, and you also, there's also a nifty survival element to it, wherein you actually have to kind of keep them hydrated. And, you know, and in battles, you can eventually find, you can find like water bottles, you can find dirty water bottles. But the nifty thing is that you kind of have to keep yourself hydrated. Now this is kind of a pro or con, because you're kind of sort of at the mercy of some RNG, because I actually got to a point in the game where I had trouble finding water and everyone started getting dehydrated. And when you get dehydrated, your overall stats start dropping, like your maximum hit points start dropping. So you start going into fights with a lot lower, you know, hit points. But one thing that I do like about this game is that it's not super punishing, so long as you know don't make stupid mistakes. I mean, there is that trial by fire element that a lot of turn-based tactical games have, whereas if you do something stupid, you're kind of fucked, and you might as well just restart the level. But in this, there have been times where I've made a mistake and I'm like, oh shit, I totally shouldn't have done that. And all of a sudden, two out of three people are down, and it's like, should I restart or should I just say fuck it and go with it? And then, you know, 15 minutes later, I, you know, army of one through the whole fucking battle, you know, just playing to the strengths of the one character that's still there and just watching out for everyone else. And it's, you know, so even though the chips are down, it is still remotely possible to come back. I think there's only one level where I really kind of had to scum save it. And well, basically how it is, you have to infiltrate a prison and rescue prisoners. But once the alarm is raised, they start executing the prisoners.
Oh God.
Yeah. And there's 10 total and you have to save at least five. But depending on RNG, like, you might lose two prisoners the turn the alarm is raised. Oh, and man. It's going to take you, like, another four turns just to get back there to get the guy that's executing them all. So that was one of I think that's the only level where you kind of had to play to near perfection. Like, everything had to be perfect. Everyone had to be in the right exact spot so that when the alarm goes down, you can capitalize and minimize the collateral damage. But beyond that, I really enjoy the challenge that, like, for example, I picked the stealthy Black Ops guy who's basically a ninja and the machinist. So all of my battles has to have a somewhat covert element to the strategy.
Yeah.
And there are some maps where that's just not going to happen and you have to kind of adapt to it. Now it's like, man, this would be the perfect map if I had, you know, the big beefy meat shield heavy weapons guy, because then he could just roll in and just be like, fuck all y'all bitches and go ham. But, you know, that's part of the challenge, that's part of the difficulty, because there are maps where stealth is absolute key, and the big meat shield guy, one of his cons is he can't hide because he's so fucking huge. I think he can only hide if he goes prone and lays down on the ground, and then his movement is severely limited, his aiming is severely limited, and he's almost useless. So it's, yeah, it's a lot of fun that way. Now, as I said, I streamed this for about, I want to say, like, five sessions last week.
Damn.
Four, five. Because, I don't know, I was just really getting into it. And like I said, you know, a lot of people were coming in and checking it out. Also, I think I was the only person streaming the game, so I kind of won by default. No complaints, but... But, you know, I kind of got input from a lot of people that played, and some people were kind of voicing how they weren't really thrilled with how the game was looking, and they were kind of peeved at how limited the characters were. Another guy who I know came in and kind of started using XCOM as the baseline comparison. Like, hey, can you come out customize your characters? I'm like, no. And so, well, that kind of sucks. And it's like, well, you can't customize them because these characters are established characters within the franchise. Like, these people that you see that I'm playing as were in Jagged Alliance 2, Jagged Alliance 1. Yeah. They're actual people, you know, so it makes sense that you can't really customize them. But I remember one person was like, man, I'm kind of surprised you're giving, you know, such a good review of this. Like, everyone on Steam is shitting on it. And it's like,
yeah,
well,
I noticed it's sitting at a fairly negative light on Steam right now. And I was kind of wondering why, but it sounds like you enjoyed it.
Well, here's the thing. Like, when you give me a code to review, I pretty much kind of sequester myself from anything about it. So, like, I can just dive in pure cold turkey without any preconceived notions or influences or biases or anything like that. And just, you know, let it go. And so, after, like, I want to say, like, the fourth stream, and the person told me that, I was like, okay, well, let's go check it out. And I looked on Steam, and, like, everyone's just bombing the ever-loving shit out of it. And looking at it, and a lot of it looks like rose-tinted rage. Like, and what I mean by that is that, like, everyone's looking at this with, you know, nostalgia goggles that it will never meet up. And, like, one review was, it was absolutely ludicrous. It was like, oh, this game looks like shit. It looks too cartoony. The graphics look like ass compared to Jagged Alliance 2. And it looks like, yeah, this is stupid. This is dumb. And that's when I was like, okay, well, when the Jagged Alliance 2 came out, it's like 1999. Really? Hold on, let me pull up some screenshots.
So people are bitching about what the game isn't instead of focusing on what it is.
Yeah. So
I hate
the impression. Yeah. So the impression that I'm getting is that it's a good game, but it might not be a good Jagged Alliance game, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
That's the impression that I'm getting from a lot of the negative reviews. But as far as I'm concerned, this is like, as someone that enjoys playing turn-based tactical games, there are some things that could use a little bit of polish. There's a little bit of jankiness here and there when trying to interact with the world. I feel that there could be some quality of life changes that would definitely benefit the game. And there is a very minor stability issue, because I have had the game crash on me at least like once or twice. So there is a little bit of jankiness that might be fixed with like a solid update.
Yeah.
But from where it's starting, from what it's doing, I did enjoy it, and I'm kind of taking a break because I don't want to burn out on it. But I'm probably sound about 2/3 of the way through the game, because the island itself is kind of divided up into 3 sections, and I've completed the second one, so I'm assuming I'm like 66% through. But it's a pretty solid game for what it is. I enjoy it very much. It's a little tricky kind of get the hang of things, but you know, and that's kind of the way it is with, you know, a lot of turn-based tactical games.
Yeah.
I mean, there is, you know, the intro level is basically tutorial level, and you know, it kind of steps you through, like, this is how you move a person, this is how you sneak up on someone, this is how sight lines work. You know, if you try to run past someone that, you know, that's looking the other way, they won't see you, but if you're close enough, they'll hear your footsteps and be alerted, and these are the different alert levels, what to watch out for, this is what you can get away with doing this, this is what you can't get away with. You know, this is how the action points work, this is how, you know, and it does a pretty solid job of explaining everything, and it does a pretty good job of explaining what your 2 selected mercenaries can do off the bat. So for what it is, I'm trying to think, for a $20 price tag, I will definitely give it a try. If you're like a diehard Jagged Alliance fan, I would recommend, you know, watching some Let's Plays on YouTube or Twitch or something like that, so you can actually see the game itself, you know.
Or watch your VODs.
Or watch my VODs. So, you know, you can have at least an informed decision. Because like I said, I mean, I haven't played Jagged Alliance 2, so I'm not familiar with the masterful genius awesomeness that is Jagged Alliance 2. I mean, apparently that was a pretty big deal back in the day, and compared to Jagged Alliance Rage, it's still a pretty big deal back in the day. But for what it is, I would definitely give it a try. If you enjoy turn-based tactic games, for $20, yeah, I give it a buy it. I mean, if you're a hardcore Jagged Alliance fan, do some homework first before blindly agreeing. Because I think if people give it a fair chance, I think you could definitely get $20 worth of entertainment out of it.
All right, what about console gamers? $30 for them, same thing?
Oh boy, yeah. I'd kind of class, you know, so with a $10 price hike, I would kind of put them in with the Jagged Alliance diehard fans. Like, do some homework, look into it. I mean, I wouldn't say it's the absolute best turn-based game out of there, but it definitely is a very good starting point.
It's good for what it is.
It is good for what it is.
And instead of focusing on the negatives and instead of focusing on what it's not, I hate when people do that. Like, this game isn't Jagged Alliance 2. It's its own thing. Treat it as its own thing instead of something it's not.
Yeah. And from what I was told, I mean, there are some really glaring differences, not necessarily good, not necessarily bad, between Rage and 2. Because I think in 2, like, you had like multiple squads, you had like 40 plus characters you can choose from and customize your groups and all sorts of, you know, crazy whatnot. Whereas Rage seems more like a survival run. You know, like, you have 2 guys, this is the conditions of this map, go to it.
It's more, you know, streamlined.
Like, yeah. Yeah. And like one, you know, one battle that I was playing on the last time I streamed it, I have to go rescue a village. That's it. It doesn't tell me how many bad guys there are. It doesn't tell me, you know, and it turns out there's like these, part of the storyline is that they're making this chemical concoction called Bliss. And basically it turns everyone into a bunch of roided up steroidal zombie type things. But basically my guys, you know, roll in and there's like a bunch of dudes in this one part of the village and I smoke them all out. And then all of a sudden another squad runs in. So I wipe them out and another squad runs in. I'm like, oh, okay. So all these guys were just bottlenecking through. I'll just I'll just chill here, wipe them all out, and when the dust settles, run in and clean it up. Turns out, I didn't realize that squads keep spawning.
Oh.
And like if I really wanted to, I would literally be sitting there all day just constantly killing people and constantly killing people and just not making any progress. I mean, you have to force your guys through to the end of the village in order to achieve the objective, or else those guys would just keep coming.
Yeah.
But on the upside, because I'm killing all these guys, there's all guns and ammo laying all over the fucking place. So, it's not like a war of attrition, but I'm not making any net profit on progress. So,
yeah.
And it's kind of funny because I when that realization struck home, it's like, oh, they keep spawning in. Shit. Okay, now I got to figure out how to get these guys through this bottleneck. So there's all sorts of, nifty little objectives that you kind of learn along the way. And sometimes it feels a little dickish that you might get blindsided. But as I mentioned earlier, even though you might get blindsided and kind of get crapped on, it's not necessarily the end.
Yeah.
If you play it smart, you play to your character's strengths, you can theoretically, hypothetically still, push on through.
Awesome.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on what you look for in the challenge.
Awesome. Well, it sounds good. Ian, thank you as always for coming on and chatting about this kind of stuff. Do you have any final thoughts on the game?
Let me think.
Or do you want to promote your Twitch stream?
No, I'm not into shameless self-promotional .com. But, I don't know, I guess in closing, some people just need a high five in the face with a chair.
All right, moving on, we got Pernell Vaughn joining us. Pernell, how's it going?
It's going pretty good, actually. How are you doing?
It's been one of those days.
I can relate to that. And the weather's where it is, and quite frankly, when this once more review session is over, I might go right to friggin' bed, because I am flipping and flopping.
I feel the same way. I slept horribly last night. I kept waking up like every hour on the hour. I don't know why. It was just one of those nights and then one of those days, and I just, man,
Well, hopefully, maybe the fun moment of game discussion may change your tune.
We shall see, because you got three games to talk about. Should we get started with these?
Let's make it happen. Let's make some magic flip.
All right, first game to talk about with you is called Override Mech City Brawl, developed by The Balance Incorporated, published by Modus Games, released December 4th on Xbox One, PS4, and Steam for $29.99. A supercharged Mega Edition is available for $39.99 and includes the roster pass with four extra mechs in the coming months. No gears, no glory, control gigantic robots and duke it out in this 3D mech brawler. Epic battles await in local and online versus mode, four-player co-op where each player controls one part of a mech, and a single-player game mode. Each mech has its own gameplay style, special moves, and finishers. Pernell, tell us about it.
It's great.
All right, your verdict.
Yeah, it's past verdict. But no, I guess you want to know what the game's all about, too.
Just a little. We probably should talk about that.
Let's do our jobs, shall we? So, what is Override Mech City Brawl? So, I guess an immediate thing that came to mind when I started playing it was like the very first Power Stone without environmental interaction or hazard interaction. So, you can control between two to four different mechs all into being plopped down in the center of a large arena. Sometimes a bowl, sometimes it's a two-layer arena, sometimes just a flat surface. But the point is, you're all encased, you're all angry, and you all want to beat the living tar out of each other. Just the way it needs to be. And this is done through, and honestly, my feels like an actually pretty fun system of button management. So your mech has a left, but you use both triggers, both bumpers, and the face buttons. The left bumper and the right bumper controls your fists, respectively. Left and right triggers controls your feet, respectively. And then the X button is like your sort of special move modifier. So when you use the triggers and bumpers alone, you can press one to move that limb. And if you want to try to make like a combo attack, you can go like, say left bumper, right bumper, and then left and right trigger. You'd like a punch, punch, kick sort of thing. It doesn't get too complicated, but it's enough to make you feel like, I'm making my robot combo up some blows on people. If you press and hold X while hitting any of those four triggers, you'll do one of four special attacks that the robot has. And all of these things ultimately end up causing your mech to kind of develop an overheat of sorts. And if you overextend your tech, your mech will actually kind of have like an overheat moment and will be unable to function. So you got to kind of manage how often and how frequently you attack with your evasion and just kind of staying back.
Yeah, you can't just button mash with this game, because if you button mash, you're going to overheat and then your opponent's going to whoop your ass.
By button mashing, in which case he'll overheat. I think you button mash him.
Boy, you just take turns button mashing.
Exactly. So none of you should do that. I meant to mention also the basic attacks, and I guess also the supers in their own way, also juice up, no, not the supers, but your basic attacks boost your special gauge, which allows you to actually do those X-held comm trigger special attacks. So managing up like your basic combos to build up your special meter, do special attacks. In addition to that, if you get to the point where you're in the danger zone and you're about to die, if you have enough special bar meter charged up, you can do a last-ditch effort attack, which is pretty much like an over-the-top super move, where as long as you get the guy in your clutches, you can do some considerable damage to him. It's your one-stop shop to pull yourself out of a dark corner to victory tan.
Ultimates can turn the tide of a battle easily, and you are proof of that. And during one of our fights, I went to use my super or my ultimate ability, and they're not guaranteed hits. You used yours, and I was far enough away that you kind of whiffed. And then I went to use mine, and during the animation, you punched me, and it completely took it away from me. And then you beat me.
That's right. That's how I roll, baby. Dicking around. Though, admittedly, that's not to say that the special moves aren't effective, because there is a block button, though. In our battle, I'll admit, I think, Joe, in the case of me when I used mine, we were both kind of in panic mode. But if you can keep your cool, there's nothing stopping you from, like, say, putting the block move up, halting the incoming attack, and then rocking your super out. So it's like, there are ways to get it in there, but it's not like, it doesn't stop the game while you do it, which is, honestly, I'm kind of happy it doesn't do that, because that would make it a little too cheap. Like, okay, he's got a super, don't go near him forever. But in addition to like the attacks that we were already describing, there is also weaponry that will occasionally, descend from the sky via like item pods. And then when they're released, you can pick them up into either your left hand or your right hand. And then you can use the right and left bumpers to manipulate the weaponry. If you have a two-handed weapon, one thing it took me a few minutes to pick up on, but once I did, I was happy about it. If you pick up a two-handed weapon and then you try to swing it left hand, left hand, left hand, for example, it takes forever, and swinging is atrocious. Why is that? Because you're supposed to actually alternate swings, like alternate arms, to swing it back and forth. So, like, I had a scythe, and I was like, why isn't this thing working? I'm pushing the button, and it's happening. Once I started doing left, right, left, right, I was like this little combo kicked in, and it was kind of fun to pull that off and knock jerkbag monsters back. Did I say monsters? Yes, I did, because in addition to the multiplayer mode, there's also a single-player campaign, which does not necessarily have you just fighting through the roster of mechs until the end of the game. What this actually does, there's like a weird little story mode where aliens are attacking, and you and your mech join a government defense force to push them back. Push them back by punching their teeth out. So it's an interesting little campaign. It doesn't take too long to get through, but it is designed to kind of feel like you are doing different things as you progress. So there's like a sort of a time calendar. So every couple days a major event will happen. And while you're waiting for that event to occur within game, there are missions you can take on, each one having a certain difficulty and certain number of days required to complete it. And they can yield you a number of different things. There is research boosting. And what research is in the single player mode is a bump point system that allows you to upgrade stats on your mech. Though, admittedly, I was just kind of getting dumb and was like, I'm going to upgrade this. It sounds like it's cool. Because, like, I didn't really quite pick up on what things did what, though I wager one of them was, like, the coolant, which was, I assumed was, allows you to not overheat as quickly. And there was one which I kind of assumed was just attack power. It's like, basically, I could assume certain things. Genesis Drive was one of the names, and I assumed that related to my ultimate move, which, frankly, if I'm playing single player, I never want to have to access that, so I wasn't investing much in Genesis Drive. You can also invest in getting new weaponry accessible. And what happens there is, if you're in a single player match in the story mode, you can have one weapon set to always be available to pick up. And there are three others you can equip, up to three that you can equip, which will allow them to kind of show up randomly, just like how item pod drops work. You can equip modifiers for the mech, which will allow you to get certain buffs like increased damage with a certain weapon type or bonus to research point acquisitions, stuff like that. It's not stuff that's really going to do anything for the multiplayer, which is good because from what I could tell, you can't equip those in multiplayer. But they are still kind of nice just for the single player to give you a sense of like doing different things. And
keeps it varied.
Exactly. You can be like, okay, I got this cool thing. It lets me get a more enhanced attacks from melee weapons, which means now for this session, I'm going to focus heavily on using melee weapons. And since different mods have different rarities, it is very possible that you can play a whole session and you never even get a rank 4 mod. So there might be weird things like that occurring where you feel like you had a particularly exceptional play because you unlocked some pretty cool mods to make your mech be the best that it can be. For Uncle Graham or Uncle Sam or whoever you want to call this guy with his weird goggles who wants you to save the world with your creepily acquired mech. I think it's like a supposed like mech wrestling league or something, but I just felt it was interesting that these guys all just had these giant mechs like, eh, I'm just kind of hanging out. Oh, look, aliens. I'm going to punch a few. Then they recruit you to join their forces. Like, wait, what? You're telling me that the mech wasn't why I joined? Our one before I was recruited? How the hell does this work? But anyway, I digress. This game is a lot of fun to play. I feel as though it falls into the surprisingly not all that common genre of what I deem party brawler, where it's not about being technical, though there is some technicalities to this game where you can like know when to block, when to activate your counterattack move, when to activate your ultimate and stuff like that, but you're not putting in a bunch of crazy combos to get moves to work, and you're not trying to break out what my friends always told me is called the Yomi game, where you're like trying to establish, well, this guy is weak against this, so I gotta focus on this. Like, screw that. No, I want to use the freaking butterfly against the giant robot with the bow tie, and I'm going to have fun doing it. Yeah, they have different strengths and weaknesses, and you can look at that if you feel like it, but nobody's really going to focus on that. All you're going to do is say, I like this robot, I'm using this robot, and the battle will just happen. If anything, by the way this game is designed, I feel like you'll make sense of those strengths and weaknesses through natural use, as opposed to studying and analyzing the game. And that's what I call party brawl. You can break it out of the party with some friends, say, let's get giant mechs and beat each other up. And no one's going to have the means to be able to say, well, I never got a chance to practice this, so I'm not as good at this as you are. No, you just play the game and you enjoy it. So I feel like this game has a decent story mode, but obviously the shine is going to be the multiplayer mode, and that multiplayer mode is a lot of fun. 10 different stages, and like you said earlier, there's going to be new mechs coming, and I wouldn't be surprised if with those mechs, they probably drop a stage or two in there as well.
That'd be just good. Because,
yeah, like more stages never hurt anybody, except that one guy, you know, the guy that was allergic to stages, but we don't talk about him much. but honestly, it's good. Very good.
Well, overall, $30 on it. What do you think of it?
I think it's a solid purchase. It's a rare type of game in a very saturated market, which makes it stand out to me. So that, and it's a good game at that. It's not a turd. So I think it's a definite buy, especially for that price tag too. It's not too bad.
I think it's worth dropping the extra $10 as well for the Mega Edition. So you could get those 4 extra mechs as they come out. Plus you get some extra skins in the game.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You said they give you the legendary skins or something.
Yeah, because there's a lot of skins to unlock in the game, and they start you off with a couple for being a cool Mega Edition owner.
Yeah, so get that in there.
It's good shit. I enjoyed it.
Well, as we already know, I did, too.
Good job.
I deserve a cookie.
You do. But instead, we're going to talk about another game.
Is it Cookie Quest?
No, it's not. This next game is called Okunoka. I hope I said it right, Okunoka, developed by Caracal Game Studio, published by Ignition Publishing, released November 30th on the Switch for $15 even. Heroes don't die, they respawn. Okunoka is a super hard platformer game where you play as Ka, an improbable blue fellow who's about to save the world from the souls of the evil hands of Oz, who is transforming the inhabitants into machines. Purnell, what is this game?
Well, first of all, you are a man who loves cookies, and in this game, your goal is to find as many cookies as you can and eat them.
I don't believe you.
Well, honestly, I made the cookie part up, but that's not too far from the premise, because while this guy's not chasing cookies, he is chasing round objects that he finds edible, and he's eating them.
Interesting. So they are cookies.
They are pretty much shiny cookies.
I'll be damned.
But the gameplay itself, well, I need to stand up to go down this little rabbit hole here. The reason why I even noticed this game was like, hey, we should see if we can request this game to do a review on it, is when I watched videos and trailers of it, it immediately brought to mind an old favorite called Super Meat Boy. Super Meat Boy was a, what I guess is called a, you know, masochist platformer, where the idea is that, you know, you got to get from one end of the stage to the other, and the stage is littered with crazy traps that will kill you over and over and over again until you master it. But as you die, the game immediately kind of respawns you back at the beginning of the stage, so it's almost like no time has passed, which kind of builds this sense of, I got to get this done. I can still get this done. And it gives you no time to really pull down and lose momentum. So even though you might die 50 times, you barely even notice it. And then when you finish the level, you feel very accomplished. Funny thing, I was talking about Super Meat Boy, but I was also talking about this game because it plays exactly like that. You go to a stage, there's a cookie, little shiny cookie at the end of the stage, and you have to dash and jump and hop to get to it. And if you die, you get respawned back, and you can try again until you get it right. You might be saying to yourself, but Purnell, I've already played Super Meat Boy. I don't need this again. And to you, I say, yes, you do. Because one, Meat Boy came out eons ago. Two, Meat Boy Forever, which was recently announced, won't be out till like next summer. And this game also has its own little cool hook that games like Meat Boy did not have. And the way that works is, as you play into the game, you eventually unlock like elemental spirits, like a ice one and a fire one. Now, no, this does not mean you can throw fireballs and kill enemies with them or that, because no, these are massacre. You don't kill things, they kill you. But what you can do is, there are certain like platforms in the stages that can be turned on and off as long as you are matching the elemental property. So if you are an ice property, which you can change by hitting the trigger button, all the ice platforms will become solid so you can run across them or jump or bounce off the walls from them, like, you know, wall hop off of them. And if you hit the trigger again, you turn them off. So what ends up happening is, in addition to having to manage just how good your jumps are going from, you know, like this ledge to this ledge to this ledge, you also have to be timing when you activate and deactivate platforms. And once you have two different elemental types, which each activate a different type of platform, your brain will start to break in wild and crazy ways as you're trying to be coordinated enough to jump, switch the platforms off, get, but like, once I say, there's like a circular ice platform. You want to jump, turn off the ice platform so you can go inside of it, then turn it back on so you can land inside the loop, jump again, and then deactivate the loop so you can jump out of it and keep on moving with that, keep that momentum moving. Because you're also trying to go for high ranking scores, up to just like, you know, up to S ranking for beating a level within a certain number of seconds. Frankly, I sucked at that, and I was proud when I was getting A's. I had very few S ranks, and I don't care. Every once in a while, also, a level might have like a secret portal in it. And if you find that portal and step inside, you will unlock like an inverted version of the world, where it'll be kind of like black, like shadowy or dark or just exceptionally hard. And you'll have like a series of like three or so levels in sequence where you're trying to collect the little collectibles on the stages and beat the stages within the number of lives they give you. Did I say lives? Yes, I did. Because only for those inverted darkness levels do they give you lives. Because the idea is that they're the super challenging stages, and they want you to be able to do them without relying on multiple deaths. Mm. So those are truly challenging levels. But the normal stages, the stages that you don't have to unlock except by just general progression, are infinite lives, infinite tries, and it is freaking glorious. Because as long as you have that sense of tenacity where you just want to get it done, I can do this, I can do this, I can do this, the hook's going to hit you, and you're going to keep playing until you get it right. And also, I need to mention, at the end of every stage, there is a wacky little boss fight where you can, you don't stomp them or anything, but there's usually like an environmental hazard you can take advantage of to make the enemy hurt himself until he dies. And the enemy will shoot like various bullets, and somebody can almost feel like junior bullet hell, but in the end, you're just trying to dodge, evade, take advantage of the environment around you to ultimately kill the boss. And that's something I need to mention for sure. The OST in this game is really nice. I can't remember the darn name of the guy off the top of my head right now, and I regret that because I wanted to give him direct credit. But I know the OST is actually on Spotify, and I have been listening to it on Spotify at work, too. But it is a good OST, and the guy who cranked this bad boy out deserves kudos for that. And my favorite track so far in the game is for the first boss fight, which is pink, called Pink Pepper. It is a nice rocking tune that makes me wish it played more often in the game. But overall, I very much enjoyed this game, and it's filling a niche that I have not felt, I haven't felt this get, satisfied since Super Meat Boy. So I am glad to see that these guys took up the torch and made a very successful quality platformer that I can definitely recommend to people. But just like I said earlier, if you're going to play this game, know that you are in for a challenge. This is not a cakewalk game by any freaking means. You're going to work for the wins.
It's a beautiful game, too. Just looking at the screenshots, it is gorgeous.
It really is. And the animations are cool, too. Like I said, a lot of the atmosphere on the levels is not a ton of animation, but when you fight enemies that show up, or the bosses, of course, when they take up larger real estate space, and you don't blur past them as you're trying to run to get the shiny cookies, they are very well animated. They look nice. The backgrounds are really colorful and cool. It's just a very pristine and pretty game. These guys did a great job with it, I think. And it definitely deserves a little bit more accolade, more kudos than I believe it's getting. Because I don't even think it's getting a lot of press, which is a shame because it deserves it.
Yeah. Looking it up, it looks like the music is done by Andrea Federici.
Federici, there's the name. The Federici man. Federici person. Yeah.
I can't tell. I don't know if it's Andrea or Andrea. It could be a guy. It could be a girl. I have no clue.
Whoever they are spectacular.
Good stuff.
Crafting fantastic beats.
Looks like the soundtrack. There's a bunch of songs available on YouTube, so I might have to go check that out.
Yeah, man. I think you like them. Desert is really good. The Pink Pepper boss fight is good. And then just in general, it's just a quality OST.
Awesome. So overall, $15 on this one. What do you think?
Great game. Recommended game. I'd say it's a buy.
Wow, you're 2 for 2 so far.
I know, right?
Should we go 3 for 3?
I don't want to spoil it, but let's see what's going on. What's the third game?
Third game to talk about is called Doom and Destiny, developed and published by Heartbit Interactive. It released December 12th on Xbox One for $11.99. Be ready for the nerdiest adventure of your life. Journey with 4 everyday friends in this turn-based, hilarious JRPG filled with parodies and cameos. Nerds are storming fantasy, and it is awesome. Pernell, what is Doom and Destiny?
Doom and Destiny is a game I thought was not going to be great, but it turned freaking hysterical. It's good. This game is really cool. So the idea is if you're looking at this game on the internet, just like various stills or whatever, you're going to look at this and probably go, this is like somebody made it in RPG Maker. Why am I going to spend money on this game? Who the hell cares? And the answer is, as to why you'd spend money on this, is because a well-crafted RPG that does not in any way, shape, or form take itself seriously. Everything is meant to make you laugh. And I mean everything. There are game homages in it. There are just general wacky lines. There's lines where it just doesn't take itself seriously. But the actual premise of the game is 4 friends go to a house where they are meant to be playing D&D, and they somehow end up in a fantasy world instead. And they are living their RPG experience through this fantasy world. So it's like they end up at one point, they're actually reading like a D&D manual in their friend's basement that's explaining how the game works. And they don't realize that they're actually already in this weird fantasy world. I think they're playing an RPG. And it's like, whoa, this guy really did a good job tweaking his basement. He asked, this is as clean as I've ever seen it. And it's like a skeleton shows up like, oh, a prop. That's fine. Just beat the piss out of the prop or whatever. And it's hilarious. And the gameplay itself is no slouch either. For example, the battle system is a turn-based battle system, but it is turn-based in the sense that there's like a time, like it's like a meter up top that determines who's going to go next. And there's like different, there's 10 spaces on this thing. And you are at the very beginning, at the front of the line, which means it's your turn to attack. If you do a basic attack, you'll move, let's say, 3 spaces in the back of the line where you'll have to wait for your next attack. But if you do a special attack, you'll move 7 spaces back in the line, and you'll have to wait 7 notches before your next turn. And if there's anybody between you at 7 and at the beginning of the line, they'll go before you. There are tests which will allow you to kind of knock people further down the line if you want, kind of like how Grandia did it. And you can just kind of work with that time system to try to figure out, okay, is this the time where I want to use my special move or whatnot? Yes or no. And gaining special moves in this game is actually kind of interesting too, because the way it works is as you move throughout the game, there are people in the world that will teach you abilities, and you can spend money to learn those abilities. And each ability is specific to different characters. So you can't like say, go to this guy and he can just buy the move and say, give it to any of these guys. No, it's very specific to specific characters. And you have to use the moves are based around those classes of characters. And you need a certain number of what's called power points to equip the different attacks that you purchase. Power points are acquired by when you level up, you will get 3 stat points to add to your character. And there are 4 different stats that come into play when you're leveling your guy up. There is might, charisma, grit, and dexterity. And when you allocate these points to those bars to advance those stats, so those primary stats, for every 5 you go up, you get 1 power point. So you might want to say go hard on one stat, or you might want to kind of diversify at least early on so you can get those quick power point buffs to kind of even your guys out and then start focusing on something stronger so you can have like a nice loadout. But I will say one thing I thought was interesting in this game is that, like I said earlier, you purchase the different moves with money that you can then equip. But whereas in a lot of RPGs, they kind of say, here's like 2 moves, and then you buy them, and then you're like, okay, I'm good to the next shop when they'll have moves, and I'll just buy those all out because I have enough money for it. In this game, I very quickly found out that I didn't have enough money to buy every move I was coming across. So you kind of start finding yourself going, all right, well, I should just buy these 2, put them to use, and then if I come back to this part later in the game, I can purchase the other moves I never got. Because, you know, you'll be crossing back and forth in the world. You might go to this temple, and then on the way back, you have to cross by this town or whatever. Like, well, on the way back, I'll buy the moves I couldn't afford the last time I was here. So it's nice to see that they're like, okay, you can't just max out all the moves and just move on. You kind of, at least early on in the game, have to actually buy what seems suitable for your needs and then put those to use and then come back later for more.
Yeah.
But I honestly have been enjoying the game quite a bit. I like the random odd other game references that exist in this thing. I don't want to spoil what they are, but they don't really pull any punches on other games that they reference in this title. And it's pretty cool. And they also, again, don't take themselves in any way seriously. They make fun of the genre. They make fun of, you know, the idea of, like, you know, managing your stats to do moves. They make fun of the fact that people can rob houses. You're basically a thief as a hero robbing houses. RPGs. I brought this up with, like, West of Loathing months ago, but when I play a game that makes me laugh just by hitting the talk button, I'm talking to a guy, like Work in Design used to be able to do this too, where you talk to a generic towns member and rather than get some dumb message like, oh, the sun sure is shining today, they say something funny. And that humorous statement makes you laugh, which in turn makes you want to talk to the next guy because you want to hear more funny things, you know? You don't know what you're going to get.
Yeah.
This game does that. I like that. I like when games do that. And this game does it. So, well, like I said, when I first started playing the game, I was expecting it to be kind of like a little RPG Maker, chintzy mabob, nothing special here. And I came away with a quality RPG that is fun to play. It harkens back to some classic styles, but it takes itself no way seriously, and it makes you laugh as you play it as well.
Well, then $12 on it. What is your official verdict?
I think we got our 3 for 3, sir, because I would buy this too.
Awesome. And for the people who are on the fence about it, it does have a 1-hour free trial on Xbox One. So just go to the store page, download it, play it for an hour, and if you like it, drop the $12 and keep playing.
Also, I totally forgot to mention, though, that the main storyline, of course, is you are, once you are teleported to the main world, they are like, hey, you have to go on this quest. And they're like, I want to go on this quest. I'm like, well, you got to go on the quest because that's your job. You're destined to do it. Like, well, I don't like this destiny. It's stupid. You know, but like, that kind of stuff, it plays off of that, too. So it's like, again, it's gold, man. It's a good game.
Yeah, I'll be buying this one for sure. I played the demo or the trial of it. I went through my hour of it, and I'm dying to get my hands on it.
Well, if you do get it, let me know, because we can talk shop about our thoughts on the game as a whole.
Sounds good. Will do, sir.
Yeah, buddy.
But that is...
And also, like, the was like the icon for it. It's like, it doesn't say Doom, it just says Doom and Day.
Oh, man. Pernell, it is always a pleasure having you on here chatting. Do you have any final thoughts to sum it up?
Well, I know the holiday season is almost done, which means that take a breather for like a week or two, folks, because we get to kind of relax for a bit, and then I guess we get the new holiday season, which is January, and everything is like a volley of new crap's going to be coming then, too. But for now, we're getting a little bit of a break, so let's enjoy it together.
All right, next game to talk about is a preview of The Textorcist, the story of Ray Bibbia, developed by Morbidware, published by Head Up Games. It's releasing Q1 2019 on Steam. No price available yet. Get ready for an electrifying mix between a bullet hell and a typing game. Dodge bullets while typing exorcisms at the very same time. Turn on both sides of your brain and jump into the adventures of Ray Bibbia. Checking this one out. It's been a while. Tom Miller, how are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing well. It's good to be back.
It is good to have you back, despite the fact that I'm coming down with a cold.
Yeah, I think I might be too, actually. It's going to be one phlegmy segment here.
Well, then I blame you.
So The Textorcist. This is one of those games that, like, I saw the description of it, and I immediately knew that I must play it. and it's also one of those games that's like, I love indie games because there is absolutely no way any AAA studio would ever do anything like that. I guess Sega, but so The Textorcist. It's in the description, and it is pretty much what it says. I'm a huge bullet hell shooter fan, and this is like basically a mix between like, well, so it's a preview. So there are actually only three essentially boss battles.
Yeah.
But
still early in the game, obviously.
Yeah, still early in the game, but you find yourself it's weird because there are two different ways to play it. You can either play with the keyboard, which is kind of like probably the better way because then you can type, but then you also have to go back and forth between the arrow keys to dodge bullets and, you know, typing out these you type out these incantations to like drive demons out from people. And while you're doing that, they're shooting bullets at you. So you have to kind of like really split up your time so you can like get a few seconds here and there to like be able to type out a few words and then go back and forth and back and forth. And it's incredibly hectic. But I think it's going to be super fun once it gets into it. And it's one of those games that I cannot wait to come out. And you can also play it with a controller, which does definitely make the dodging bullets part easier. And, when you do that, it gives you the option, you have like the left and right triggers and, each one of those has a letter on it. So you like spell out the words that way, but it's way, way slower. So I don't know. it's weird because playing a bullet hell shooter with a keyboard seems like a nightmare to me, but I think it is kind of the easier way to do it in this case.
Yeah, given you have the whole keyboard there for the exorcisms that you've got to perform.
Yeah, but even outside of the gameplay, I really enjoyed the game. I mean, it has this really good like dark comedy kind of aesthetic going on with the different characters, and at the same time, it's really over the top and. You have this cool, like, sort of John Carpenter-ish score going on. Got, like, that synth rock happening. And, like, every time I got into a new phase of the boss battle where, like, a new drum track would come in or so, it would be like, hell yeah! and you know what a score makes you say that. Like, you know...
Shit's about to go down.
Right. Yeah. I really enjoyed my time with this, even playing it for that half an hour or so that I did. And I really am looking forward to the full version.
Cool. For the exorcisms, are they short, brief, like type out one word kind of things, or are they full sentences?
You get like, so basically each kind of segment of the incantation that you need to do is one phase of the boss fight. And it's, so you get like a full sentence or like several words on the screen at a time. And then like every time you finish a sentence, it like sends a wave of, I don't know what they are, like holy water bullets or something. I don't know.
And they, Jesus they get, bullets.
Jesus bullets, yes. yeah. So it's, I don't know, it's a good time. It's I think it's going to be an incredibly stressful game to play, but also a very fun one.
Awesome. Well, it doesn't come out until next year sometime, so I can't ask for an official review. So all I can ask is this something that people should keep their eyes on?
Oh, definitely. I mean, it's such a unique way to play a game, and I don't know, I think it's going to be really fun. And just the sense of humor and the aesthetic of it, I think it'll appeal to a lot of people who are looking for something a little on the weird side.
Which is always good. I love the weird stuff.
Yeah.
Speaking of weird, Tom, it is always good having you on. Do you have any final words to sum this up?
Oh, God, I forgot about that part. And how
it's been a while.
Tom's weekly embarrassment. All right. I don't know. Anyway, but it was good to be back.
All right, next up, we got Chris Taylor joining. Chris, how are you doing?
It's a mixed bag, really.
Why is it mixed?
I feel like I'm coming down with something like a cold or maybe just allergies or something. Like, it's getting to that point, though, where it's like, no, this is definitely a cold and I'm just in denial. But good, because, you know, in 8 days, provided I haven't died from whatever I'm denying right now, I get to go to Japan, see my girlfriend.
Nice.
Yeah. And also, I just got some games, and even better than that, SNK Collection just released all of their extra games today, so I've got 11 more games on that collection I've already purchased.
Oh, yeah, the 9 in the free update, and then the 2 to download.
Yeah, I was like, that's a weird way of going about it, but okay.
Yeah,
I'm not going to complain. Yeah, I was confused because I was like, oh, no, it's only 2 games because I checked the downloads first, and then I opened up the actual collection. I was like, oh, they just automatically threw in some more, so okay.
Yeah.
So, way to go, guys.
Well, I hope you feel better soon. I'm sure the listeners are going to be confused because the last review was with Tom Miller, who finally made his return to the show, and I was feeling sick during that one, but I'm feeling better now, so the quality of my voice went from this to this.
Yeah, okay.
So, hooray.
wasn't just the new headset.
Oh, God, I don't even want to get into this new headset. It is fucking with me so bad right now. My old headset broke, and this other headset, everything sounds so weird now. Oh, man. Anyway, we should probably talk about games, huh?
Sure. Let's talk about video games.
All right. You got 3 to talk about tonight. The first one is called Meridian Tavern Story, Patty and the Hungry God, developed by Ridion Incorporated, published by Kemco, released November 27th on PS4, November 29th on the Switch for $19.99. Patty's brother has been possessed by the God of Poverty, and the whole family has become poor with huge debts. This is the beginning of Patty's struggle. To pay back the debts, let's open a tavern in Meridian, gather ingredients, and start cooking. Chris, tell us about it.
Okay, well, this game may remind you of a game I talked about recently, which is Little Dragon Cafe, in that a mysterious curse has befallen a family, and they conveniently have to cook a whole bunch of food and, you know, raise their restaurant level in order to overcome it. But that's actually where the similarities end, because this is a lot more of an RPG than Little Dragon Cafe. So the story basically opens up with this lady and her little brother and their manservant of apparently they make a joke that he's been in the family for 120 years, which, you know, and then it's like, actually it's more like 60. And I'm like, both of those are a lot pretty big. But and plus it's an RPG, so you just never know with people, and 120 years might actually be a thing. Anyway, I am digressing hard already.
Just a little.
Just a little. So the little boy bumps a statue, a random statue, on their way to this big giant town where this girl is, I guess, going to live. I don't actually know where they're coming from or why they're going to this place or what the circumstances really are. But, you know, and because it's like a 10-minute long cutscene that I accidentally skipped the first time, because it has a little icon where you push the X button to skip, and I thought it meant skip this like box of dialogue, but it skips entire stories. and just takes you right to the gameplay. So I had to reset and then watch, and I was just like more anxious about accidentally pushing X again than I was really paying attention. So a little cute anime bunny thing comes out of the statue. It's clearly a spirit of some kind. And it looks like a little timid creature, so the boy feeds it a cookie. And then it turns out that the little cute animal is actually the god of poverty, and if you feed it anything, then you are entering into a contract with it. So
that's how they get you, man.
Tough luck, little boy. That's how the cookie crumbles. And so the god of poverty basically curses your family to be poor, which you find out once you get to this posh town with, like, all these maids and stuff, and, like, you know, you sit down and invite the mayor over to dinner, and it's a lush spread, and you're just talking about your future in the town. And then suddenly, Big Mustache, the, you know, bad guy who owns all the money, his name's not Big Mustache, I just can't remember what his name is. He has a big mustache, though. He comes in and says, oh, haha, you're all in debt, and I own this place now, and you have to get out. And so that's how... The curses are very, like, you know, very straightforward and fast in this game.
Yeah, they don't stick around.
No, they don't mess around. Your family is basically the girl and the boy and the manservant, because the father is apparently alive, but we don't know where he is. He's disappeared while gathering ingredients or something. The girl and the boy are basically put into this tiny town called Kokoro. And they conveniently, make friends with the two other young people in the town. They actually make a joke in the game about how there are no kids in the village. And, basically they are the way that they are able to break the curse from the god of poverty is to feed it food, like lots and lots of food. So your task, your sort of meta task is to feed as much food to this god as possible. Only never really do that. I guess the whole point of it is to take this humble little, you know, tiny tavern that you're given as a sort of, you know, turnaround on your luck. And then you go and, you know, gather ingredients and cook food in order to raise your tavern's level. And, you know, that's where it is similar to Little Dragon Cafe again. Basically, the more recipes you master and the more popular food you make, the better people like you, the more popular your tavern gets. And as your tavern increases in popularity, that unlocks new story segments and new areas to explore. Now, the actual going out and getting the ingredients thing occurs on, you know, there's a world map where you just choose a location. You get one to start, and it's only one room. So this game is definitely a slow starter because you have to increase your tavern like three times before you can unlock the second area. So you're going to be spending the way your daily routine goes is that you leave your house. You have your two friends in tow who actually also own the ingredient store, and it's her childhood friend. It's some edgelord guy, dresses all in black and is generally bored of things, which, you know, is not a trope at all. But he's actually your tank. So, you know, you gotta be nice to him. And you go out into these fields and go to, collect points, you know, collection points, little, you know, the little shiny stars on the ground. And, you know, gather up some ingredients, vegetables and whatnot. And then you have random encounters with enemies, and the enemies themselves also drop ingredients. So basically it's going to be, you know, the collection points, you can only collect that once. And then the rest of the ingredients you get from enemies or you purchase at the store. So that, you know, that becomes that. And then once you leave the area, then you can't return to it for the rest of the day. So then you spend the rest of your day in town, and there's no timer, by the way, so all of this can happen, you know, just whenever. You go back to the town, you go into your tavern, and with all the ingredients that you've gathered, on top of recipes that you have collected either from townspeople, sometimes they're dropped by monsters, sometimes they are like a lot of the time, actually, they are bought from the store alongside the ingredients. You can actually purchase a huge list of things to cook. You then go into cooking mode, which is surprisingly dense. There's so much stuff you can cook, and the like it says the game boasts 600 recipes, and I definitely believe them. Because, you know, your starting list, like, from level one is, like, 30 or 40 things that you can make. And not only do you have to cook, basically it's all just menu-based. You know, you choose your ingredients, and in the case of recipes you haven't tried yet, if you're doing recipe cooking as opposed to original cooking where you just throw a bunch of stuff in a pot and see what happens. Which, by the way, if you do that, if you just throw a bunch of stuff in the pot and what happens is an inedible item, it does the same thing where it pixelates it, like in Zelda Breath of the Wild, which is one of my favorite visual gags.
Oh, nice.
Where the food is so bad that you can't even look at it. Anyways, so you then choose your ingredients, and cooking is not super simple in this game in the sense that, so in order to make like a bread product, you have to turn flour into bread, and then you have to, you know, then make a certain amount of a certain bread, and then you have to make a certain amount of like something else. You basically, you start with like basic ingredients and you turn them into things and then combine the things and, you know, various steps, and it, you know, gets more and more complex. Now, of course, there's no rhythm game or anything to, you know, to have to get through to make a good dish. Basically, it just comes down to, do you have the ingredients and did you guess correctly? Because some of the ingredients the first time, or some of the recipes, the first time you make them, they'll have like maybe three out of the four items listed, and then there'll be a question mark. And you kind of have to guess as to what the question mark ingredient is. Mm-hmm. Early on, though, it's like really obvious. So it'll be like, you know, let's say, how do you make
carrot soup, and it's everything but a carrot is the ingredient?
Exactly. Yes, exactly. So, you know, but it can get kind of tricky. Like some of the rice dishes, you'll be like, oh, is it salt or soy sauce? Because, you know, and then you mess up the first time and it's like, bleh. And you're like, oh, okay, it's soy sauce. It's same, basically the same thing. But yeah, so once you do that, you load up your menu with your manservant there. You hand them off your recipes. The game actually has a rating for every recipe that changes every day as to how much demand there is for the food and whether people have gotten tired of it. So if they're demanding one thing, if you make that, then you end up, you know, doing a lot better. And so once you choose all of the ingredients, then you basically open the restaurant and that ends the day. You know, after which you just wake up the next day and you're basically awarded money for how well your restaurant did that day. And, you know, you use that money to purchase more ingredients or purchase items and equipment for your ragtag group of rapscallions. And then you just start the process over again. Now, the other thing about it is that characters money from battles, and you don't gain experience from battles. All you gain is ingredients. So the way you level up your character, your characters, is by just shoveling dish after dish of food into their face. So if you made, you know, one carrot, you know, you like stocked your restaurant with like five carrot soups because you just found a lot of carrots or whatever, and then you have like, you know, however many left over, you give them to your characters so that they will gain experience points and then get stronger. And the only way to gain money is by either selling stuff to the store straight up or creating the dish and then selling it at your restaurant, provided it does sell. So it becomes this thing where it really seems like the game focuses a lot on the cooking aspect, which is really interesting because, you know, of the few games I've played that have a cooking aspect, it's almost always like an afterthought. Yeah. You know, it's more about the exploring and the adventuring. But in this game, you literally can't adventure until you are good at cooking. So it's definitely an interesting other experience. Certainly way different than the Kemco X-Create RPGs we usually talk about.
Yeah.
Yep. Well,
overall, $20 on it. What do you think of it?
I think $20 is a good deal because it has clearly a ton of content. Like, there's a lot of areas to explore, and it took me forever just to get the second one. And even then, that's when they started introducing things like bosses and such. Speaking of which, I actually do want to give a brief shout out to the soundtrack, because the battle theme is super good. Like, I actually really didn't like Battles to End early, because it's like cool rock music with like synth solos and stuff. Incredible.
Nice.
So yeah, this is and the game is presented really well. It's written well, and the cooking thing is, you know, it's really interesting because it's actually a challenge, but you know, it's really cool to like actually unlock new ingredients and new recipes and actually pull it off. And, you know, the rewards are there. It's a very good RPG that, like I said, it relies really heavily on the cooking thing. So be prepared for a game that will basically start very slowly, like watching a pot of water boiling.
I see what you did there.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. All right. Next game to talk about is called Hunter's Legacy Perfect Edition, developed and published by Lienzo. It released December 13th on the Switch for $6.99. Embark on a feline-filled quest set in an action-packed fantasy universe brimming with fierce enemies, intense sword fighting, and the classic feeling of Metroidvania adventure. Hunter's Legacy Perfect Edition features new story sequences, more character dialogue, new animations, an updated level design, a brand new minimap feature, improved melee combat, and a new game plus mode. Chris, if that didn't tell us everything we already needed to know, give us the rest of the details.
All right, well, it appears that it typically falls on me to review the cat-based adventure games. In fact, I'm working on a list for the end of the year for new Switch owners as to what the hierarchy of cat-based games, you know, basically like a top 10. I think there's 10 by now, but
I would imagine there are.
So I would definitely put, you know, to get ahead of myself a little, I would put this game on the upper part of that list. Hunter's Legacy, a perfect edition. So we already have a couple of cat adventures on the Switch. We have Cat Tales, which we talked about very recently. And then we have Cat Quest, which is an incredible game. The thing about Cat Quest is that I purchased it recently, and I actually started and finished it this week. It's kind of a short game. But, like, I was also playing it, like, a lot. And the thing about Cat Quest is I like that it was a solid adventure. And I also appreciated that practically every line of dialogue in that entire game is a cat pun. So imagine the whiplash I got when I pop in Hunter's Legacy, and it's actually a super serious story involving cats with no cat puns, except for the title, which is really weird to me. Like, one of the characters actually described something as a catastrophe, and they didn't even emphasize the word cat in the catastrophe. So I didn't know what I was dealing with here. Okay. So anyways, so the game is that you play as Icky, who is Icky, I suppose you could say, not Icky. It's I-K-K-I, whatever. A female huntress of a cat who looks like a Wilfred, so I appreciated her right away, who uses swords and bows to kind of run around and run and jump and stab stuff. And she is basically charged with stopping an evil goblin king or something like that, a shadowy figure who makes off with a MacGuffin that you have to, you know, catch and stuff. And the names are, like, for the most part, impossible to remember in this game. It's all vowels and like apostrophes, kind of like the Khajiit people in Skyrim.
Oh yeah,
like with their ridiculous names. So I didn't bother to do that. Basically, what this game is that you run around in an area like, you know, it's classic Metroidvania. It's basically you have a limited amount of things that you can do at first, and the enemies are, you know, coming at you. They take a lot to destroy. And, you know, you fight a boss and get some more dialogue, find out a little bit more what's happening, and then conveniently get the item that allows you to get to the next area. What sets this apart is that, for one, the art style. I've actually never seen a Metroidvania take on the kind of sort of looks like a moving comic book sort of thing. I see a lot of platformers like this. Dudeland is a good example of, you know, just using what looks like hand-drawn art that's moving around the screen.
Yeah.
So this one's, like, interesting in that way. I guess all the Metroidvanias I've been playing lately have been pixelated. So there's that. The other thing is that the difficulty is actually a little higher on this game than your typical thing. So, like, when I think about a cheap Metroidvania, because $6.99, let's face it, that's pretty cheap. I think about, like, Ninja Striker, which is one of my favorite 3DS games, and it is a pixelated thing, and it's extremely straightforward. It's just like you just find the dungeon and fight the boss and then get the next item and, you know, repeat. But I felt like that game was a little too easy right up until about the last boss. This game had me, like, pulling out hair in, like, the second area. Because on top of enemies taking a lot of hits to actually destroy, some enemies have that thing where they're invincible unless you do one thing right. So, like, there will be an enemy that can shoot things at you while floating around in this bubble. Well, your sword isn't going to pop that bubble. The only thing you can do is get on the ground and use the twin stick aiming to aim your bow at it and then hold it enough to actually power up the bow and then hit it, and then that will pop the bubble and then you can attack it before it can regain its footing or bubbling, as it were.
Regain its bubbling.
Regain its bubbling. So there's also environmental traps. There are plants that you can cut down with your sword, of course, and, you know, get items underneath. Some of those plants, though, if you don't get them, and sometimes they'll be, like, alone on a platform kind of deal, they'll just sit there and grab you, and then you have to, like, sit there and jam on the jump button, you know, over and over again to get out of it. And then, you know, at this point, of course, there's some enemy that's coming at you, so you really have to, like, plan ahead. You can't just, like, run around and bounce off stuff with your sword until you find the right place on the map to stand in, and then, you know, you get the next item. You actually do have to survive a little bit in this game, and that, I think, sets it apart from a lot of the stuff I've been playing lately. But it's not Dark Souls hard. It's just enough challenge, I'd say, to keep you interested into going to the next areas. I suppose the only thing that I would have to say against it is that it does require quite a lot in order to upgrade certain things. So if you want to upgrade, well, like, you know, let's take Cat Quest, a completely different game, for an example. In order to get more life or more armor or attack or whatever, you just have to get enough coins and pay the local blacksmith and get your stuff upgraded. Well, in this game, there is the blacksmith and there is money, and you do get plenty of it, but in order to actually upgrade anything, you also have to find ores, which are scattered across the levels in chests. And in that way, there's a little bit of an invisible rail to this game, in that you won't be able to, like, upgrade your stuff early on just by, you know, grinding out enemies or whatever. And there is no leveling system. So I foolishly purchased an extra heart before I purchased an extra strength to my sword with the mere 3 ores that I got in the first area. And so, you know, for the entire second area, I had to go with the level 1 sword, whereas my playing style is more glass cannon. I always upgrade my weapons first. And so, you know, that was a little bit of a hindrance, and I felt like that was a little bit of a bummer, but, you know, the game does purport, you know, itself to be a difficult game, so, you know, I can't nitpick that just because it was difficult in a way I didn't like.
Yeah.
But yeah, overall, the aesthetics are good, music's good, the storyline is good, you know, it's, I would say, probably the most serious game starring Cats out of the entire list. I would have to say, I may have to dig a little more to find a more serious game, but yeah, it actually has an interesting story with some depth, and so it's worth checking out for that. Definitely, you know, versus something like a Metroid, which doesn't really have a story, or Castlevania, which all have the same story.
Well, then $7 on this one. What do you think of it?
Yeah, I probably talk too much to recommend a game that is $7. I mean, for a Metroidvania, that's an incredible price. And considering that this game has, made the rounds in Steam and whatnot, they definitely had every chance to tune it to as good as it's going to get, essentially. So, if you're a Metroidvania fan and you are looking for a new experience, this one is going to be on that side of it. It may not wow you with a ton of variety or over the top action, but it is solid and it is interesting, and it's definitely worth $6.99. Come on.
Yeah, I mean, come on, it's $7.
I spent more than that at Jack in the Box. And that was not a fun adventure.
Oh God. And for the people wondering about the extra content, the Perfect Edition is exclusive to the Switch, although they are looking into possibly bringing it to other platforms at a later time. I don't know if that would be through the way of a free update or a re-release, or who knows what their plans are. But for now, all the bonus content and extra goodies are exclusive to the Switch version.
All right, cool. So there you go. Go get it.
Do it up. $7.
Plus, it plays in portable mode, which I like to play my exploration games in portable mode because, you don't want to put it down.
And it's cats.
Yeah, it's cats. It's another cat game. Come on, go get it.
All right, well, you got one final game to talk about tonight. One final game on the show completely called Gensokyo Defenders, developed by Team Shanghai Alice, published by Sony's Untitled label. Released November 29th on the Switch for $19.99. Blistering shoot 'em up action meets tactical tower defense as you choose from almost 20 popular characters to stop the fairy onslaught. Take advantage of their unique powers and a selection of tricky traps to freeze, fry, and blow your enemies away. Chris, tell us about it.
Well, the 20 characters thing I haven't actually tried out yet. I only played it in story mode where you have the one character. But that's all right. I'll take their word for it, because that sounds like a Toho game. Toho?
Whichever it is. I still don't know.
Yeah. So, yeah, again, Gensokyo Defenders. This is a game in the Toho, I don't know what you would call it, the overarching universe. The extended universe.
There you go.
Toho. The Toho cinematic universe. which, in general, Toho games are bullet hell, very elaborate shoot 'em ups, usually vertical, although so far on the Switch they've only been horizontal and from third person behind the shoulder camera'd. This is the third game now on the Switch, which is funny because I think they have yet to actually release any of the original Toho games that, made them famous. So to a new fan, this is probably going to seem like a strange offshoot. And I'm a new fan, so I don't know what the other context would be. So they've basically, decided to go in a different direction with this game, and they actually used the story to explain that the same characters that are in all the other, Toho games that have come out so far, are now engaging each other in what they call war games, rather than Danmaku, which is just the word for bullet hell. And, they're surprised by this. The main character, of the series, the shrine priestess, I forget her name actually, but, she's expressing surprise that they're going for this tactic, but that's how you start the tutorial, and it kind of teaches you what to do. So what you do is you start with your character on a map, which is set up like a grid, so it kind of looks like a strategy game in that sense. You run around the grid and set up traps. You have a certain amount of money that you start with, and each trap costs a certain amount of money, so you set up as many traps as your money allows, because there is no reason to keep your money. So you spend it all. That's instructed in the game that you should do that. So you purchase traps and you set them up along the path, and once you start combat, then enemies will start coming from a spawn point and will start traveling towards your spawn point, which is, of course, your basically your tower you're defending, your metaphorical tower, of course, because it's basically tower defense. And instead, though, of relying on the traps to completely take them out, you still have full range over your character, and you operate as a twin-stick shooter. So you can run around the traps, or, you know, pass the traps, or however you like, and take out the enemies, as, or, you know, sit there and spawn camp, and take them out as they're coming out, you know, and defeat them all with your bullets. And you also have two different spells, and a third spell that you have to charge up for, but, you know, it is much more powerful than the others, which all of those tend to fall into the typical Toho tradition. And once the wave of enemies is done, you collect, you know, you actually get money for every enemy that you destroy. So you end up going back into setup mode, and you can set up even more traps and get ready for even more waves of bad guys, which, of course, are led by the other magicians or witches or fairies or whatever they are. And at the end of the last wave, then you win the battle and, you know, move on. And if you haven't, the thing about it too is that if you know, you yourself can take damage, of course, and these enemies are shooting at you as well as running after you. And if you lose all your health, it actually just counts to three and lets you spawn back at your spawn point, and you can try again. Of course, the ultimate goal is that you want to not die at all, so that you can get the 3-star rating. And you know, I guess that's for achievement's sake. It actually doesn't really. There's no reward that seems to carry over into the next situation, so it really just seems that you're just doing it to be the best that ever was. So yeah, like basically, I found this to be really fun. I typically am not a fan of tower defense, but I was a fan of this for the sole reason that it has what I've always considered to be the missing ingredient in tower defense games, and that is direct getting in there and getting your hands dirty, as yeah. well as, you know, your traps helping you out. So that's, in that sense, I really like it, because you actually do have to still play a shooter. It's just that it's all set up differently and strategically. And, you know, like I said, the traps are, some traps will just sit there passively on the ground. Some of them will shoot at a certain amount of squares distance away, like, you know, the sort of a catapult tower sort of thing. And then, like, there's some that even just slow down your enemies at certain points so that you can, you know, have a strategic spot to take them out quickly. And, you know, it didn't take me too many levels to start dying in this game, so it actually is a very good challenge. And like I said, it gives you enough sort of leeway to, you know, like, you can even keep setting up traps while the enemies are coming, you know, so you can kind of strategize on the fly if you like. So it suits a lot of different play styles. And while it's, you know, I'm not even sure if it was developed by the Toho developers. I know that name is probably at least one of the other games I've talked about. But yeah, like, it's not, it's still not the, you know, traditional bullet hell shooter that the Toho series is known for, and it could be a fan creation. I actually don't know, because I'm not an old school fan of Toho, so I haven't played too many of the games, but this is definitely on its, you know, on its face as a strategy tower defense game. This is probably one of the best ones I've ever played, so.
Nice.
Yeah.
So overall, $20, your verdict?
Yeah, $20. If you want a really good strategy game with some, you know, cute anime characters that have come and gone for, like, what, 30 years now, I think. I think the original Toho games were in the 80s and still had the same characters. So, you know, for fans, of course, it's going to be great to revisit your, you know, your favorite characters and play as them and such. And for new fans of it, this is just a really good tower defense game that adds in an element of being able to sort of interfere, not interfere, but, well, you know, get in there and start shooting some stuff.
Yeah, get involved.
Yeah, yeah. And $20, I mean, that's about the price of a good strategy game, so there you go.
Awesome, sounds good.
Yeah.
Well, that is it for this episode. Chris, thanks as always for coming on. Thanks again to everyone else who came on and did their thing. Music this episode, we're going to play a couple of tracks off of Omega, a tribute to Xenogears that just came out through Materia Collective.
Oh, yeah.
Going to be some good music, some good tracks, and you should pick up that album because a lot of good music. There's like 40 tracks on there.
Yeah, I recently joined Chris Porter's video game soundtrack collection like Facebook page, and he's been a really good supporter of video game music in general, and he's on the album. And I know our friend Lauren is on the album, right?
Yep, Lauren's on there. Our friend Zyko's on there. Dale North is on there.
Now there you go.
So
everybody's on there. Everybody's on there. Not me, but everybody. They don't ever invite me to things, but that's fine. I usually don't have time.
It's okay. I don't get invited either, but that's because I have no talent.
Yeah, and neither of us have any friends. We just have each other and this podcast.
Yay!
And that's mostly good enough.
the night, as passion burns in your heart, ready to fight, nerve head close by your side, like a proud wolf alone in the dark, with eyes that watch the world.
Oh.